Hey, what's happening? Welcome to another episode of Let There Be Talk. It is April 6th, a Monday, day after Easter. Hope you had a great Easter. This episode is brought to you by my good friends, McGuire Harley Davidson, my favorite motorcycle shop on the planet. Check them out if you live in the Bay Area. Go and see McGuire Harley Davidson. Get your bike serviced, buy a new bike. Maybe buy some motor clothes. Maybe get a job there. Whatever, man. You into motorcycles? You ever thought about working for Harley? Go see them. Who knows? They're a family-owned operation. Fantastic showroom. They are 93 First Avenue North, Pacheco, California. You can find them at McGuire-HD.com. Love this place. They've got all kinds of amazing used bikes right now. You might think it's hard to get a Harley. Wrong. Walk in, talk to my boy Ryan, get yourself financed. You'd be surprised how easy it is to get one. Go see my guys there, McGuire Harley Davidson, or call them 925-945-6500. Get a shirt. Whatever. Support those guys. They've been supporting Let There Be Talk. Fantastic Harley Davidson dealer right there, McGuire Harley. Thank you, guys. Love you. Everybody, how was your Easter? If you do that thing, you do Easter. Did you do any Easter egg hunting? All that stuff. Did you party? What'd you do? Happy Easter. Great episode today. If you listen to Let There Be Talk, you know every musician that sat on the couch here at the house, they all say the same thing. And like I said, Cedric Bixler coined the phrase, Kiss is the gateway drug to rock and roll. They're the gateway band. Meaning, you know, the first record you probably got when you were young, if you're an old fucker, is Kiss. It was definitely for me. That was the band. It was Kiss. And then it became AC/DC. Then it became Ted Nugent, Blue Oyster Cult. You know, all that stuff, the 70s rock. But nothing touched Kiss. And it's strange because I love the kid, the God of Thunder, Gene Simmons. He was the guy for me, man. It was so fucking, I mean, if you look back at that when you're a kid and you just see this guy with his painted face spitting fire and blood, and stomping around the stage with these crazy, crazy axe bass, you know, just spilling a God of Thunder. That shit is evil, man. Evil. I love it. Never back then, when I was at the Cow Palace watching Kiss, did I think, one day, man, gonna have his son on my podcast. None of that shit existed. And the reason I think about that is a magic moment happened for me this last week. And it was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me. One of the most generous and awesome things. Mark Maron interviewed Mick Jagger on his podcast last week. I get a text 8:30 in the morning. Hey, man, what's happening? I'm like, oh, Maron, I just happened to be up. It was total fluke. I'm never up at 8:30, but my clock was all fucked up in my head. I text back, no, not much. And he's like, hey, I'm going to interview Mick. No, he says, I'm going to interview Mick today. And you're not thinking Mick Jagger. You know what I mean? Mick Jagger on a podcast. I'm thinking Mick Jones. Fuck, that'd be badass. The Clash. You know, Mick Taylor. But Mick Jagger. Wow. He says, why don't you come over to the house, throw on the cans and listen to this interview while I'm doing it. I was like, fuck yeah, I am there. And I burn rubber over to his house. He lives about 20 minutes away. Park, go in. And we talk on the mics a little bit about what it means, what the Stones mean to us, what Jagger is to us. The level of badass that guy is. You think about these songs he wrote in the 70s. How the fuck did he come up with those amazing lyrics? Midnight Rambler, Can't You Hear Me Knocking? You Got to Move. It was Sister Morphine. I mean, I can go on and on, but I'm just saying there was this era from like 68 to 81. Jagger was just writing incredible fucking lyrics. Just insane. So I'm at Maron's and Jagger calls. I'm not going to give it all away because you can listen to it on WTF. And I want you to listen to it because it's pretty fucking cool. But as he calls, I start to get, I start to fucking tear up, man. But for multi-levels of reasons. The main reason that I was so emotional was mostly that Marc Maron had shared this moment with me. And the levels of generosity and help that this guy is, the level of friendship that I don't even know how to fucking explain it. What I'm saying is you got to think about a guy who's doing comedy at 44 years old, out there grinding it out for a few years, 3 years, and all of a sudden you're on Marc Maron's podcast and your entire fucking life changes. Everything completely changes for 1,000% better. It's just, these people that I've met in the comedy world are just, it's just incredible to me. It's weird when you think about all, you're a grown man and most likely you're not going to have new friends in the middle of your life, except for maybe some people you work with at a job, but nothing deep. And then you're a grown man and you meet people that you're like, not only inspired by it, but that you love and shit. I'm getting out of control on this, but what I'm saying is it's a long way to go to say, I love that man, Marc Maron. So, yeah, man. It was an awesome week. A fucking awesome week. Anyway, I hope you guys all have your awesome week at some time. Whatever it is, man, just go for it. Whatever you're trying to do in life, fucking do it, man. Feels good. Get out there, take a chance, and go for it. As corny as that sounds, inspiration, whatever, man. We're only here once. You hear that 1,000 times. Do what you want to do, man. Don't think about the repercussions or failures. Get out there and do it. Anyway, sorry, got all kooky there. Just wanted to explain that. This week, I just got some last-minute shows. Going to be in Denver at the Comedy Works with good buddy Chris D'Elia, man. He called me up. Want to go to Denver? Fuck yeah, I want to go to Denver. We have a great time together, and I love Denver. So see you there this week. Comedy Works Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Also, speaking of Marc Maron, Mother's Day, Mark asked me to open for him in San Francisco. It is going to be awesome. Davies Hall, May 10th, San Fran. Get tickets right away, please. It will sell out. And what else? Oh, last thing. You guys all say, hey, where's your shirts? I want a shirt. Where's your shirts? You always say that. And I've got a shirt now. Now, look, I don't care if you don't buy it or whatever. But what I'm saying, don't ask for shirts and then not buy it. It's only $20, man. I'm making zero money on it. Zero. And I don't care. I just want you guys to have some shirts out there that keep emailing me, where's your shirts, where's your shirts? So go to catatonic.com, my good buddies that make the stickers, CADATONIC.com, catatonic.com. Hit the homepage, then you'll see store, and there it is. It's the Delrazer 666 shirt. I love the design. I think it's fantastic. I raced BMX as a kid. I love, old BMX shit. I love 70s stuff. So, boom, we've got this print for you. Check it out. We got a pre-sale going right now, so you got to order it now. We can't really make them until we get a certain number. So get on there right away and order up a shirt. $20 all in, and you get some free stickers with it. That's pretty fucking cool. And last but not least, let's see. Oh, yeah. Thanks for all the donations. DeanDelRay@yahoo.com if you want to donate to the podcast. Still trying to get the new computer. And also leave your reviews on iTunes. Keep those going, man. Thousands of people listening to this and 250 reviews. So lock one down. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. I love all you guys. Have a great week. Until then, light the candles of rock. Here he is, Nick Simmons. Hey, what's happening? I got another episode of Let There Be Talk. Great guest today. Nick Simmons is on.
How's it going?
Yeah, son of the God of Thunder and Shannon Tweed, right?
Yes, that's. I can always tell. You know who's into what when they, you know, if they mention both my parents, I'm like, okay, he's into the rock history stuff. You know, a lot of people say just dad's name.
Oh yeah.
But when they say mom's name, I go, okay, this one, a guy who, you know, he knows who Pamela Corson is and things like that.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
Jim Morrison's, you know, they know all about the, not only the rock stars, but the associates of the rock stars and the,
yeah,
and
well,
the family.
Yeah, well, your mom is crazy famous, too. Not like your dad, but your mom. I mean,
she's
she's
got quite a following in Canada, actually. There's a street named after her up there.
Is that right?
Weirdly, yeah. The Shannon Tweed Boulevard.
And she was, I mean, she's been Playboy. She did Playboy with her sister.
Yeah, she was Playmate of the Year in 87. You know what's funny is kids, you know, when you're a high school kid, you're weird about stuff like that. And I think grown men are, too. But in high school, they were like, you know, like, is it weird? Like, your mom was, like, naked?
And
was like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
It's not
weird?
And
then they're just like, no, because, well, first of all, I don't read the issue she's in. Like, that's not, people think, like, oh, his mom's in Playboy, so he just sits there with it and just fucking, of course not.
Yeah.
There's that thing that, like, guys like to deny that their parents have any sort of sexual history at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, no, they were human beings before I came along, and they have their own lives. It's kind of silly to be embarrassed about that. I don't know.
I do a bit where I say, you think your mom just had sex once and then gave her vagina away.
Yeah, literally.
Like,
yeah.
I don't need this anymore.
Nope. It will remain in a glass case, untouched by time. Like,
no, they just give
David
it to the next person.
David Duchovny's hand in Zoolander, just untouched.
Yeah.
Pristine. No. I mean, guys be like, hey, I saw your mom naked. And I was like, well, no one wants to see your mom naked, so which one would you rather be?
Oh, yeah, right?
It's like, at least
most moms are
my mom, my mom's very pretty, and I closed my eyes when I fucked yours, so that's, I'm kidding.
you hit him with that one? Wow.
Anyway.
Wow.
I had to have some of those cocked and loaded back in the day, you know, when you're 13.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids are brutal.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, you know, I mean, there's...
Hey, I banged your mom. Yeah, well, I tried banging your mom, but I couldn't get it up. So that's like, you got to have lots of those.
I mean, I remember being at Little League, and there's always that really hot mom, and all the guys are like, oh, man, you know.
My sister's a model, and people are like, was that hard? I'm like, no. It has nothing to do with me.
Yeah, that's weird. Why would somebody say that?
Harvey, like, guys hitting on your sister's like, no, she can do whatever she wants.
That's gross.
What if you've got, like, a boyfriend you don't like? I was like, it's none of my business. If she doesn't like a girl I like, guess how much say she has in it?
Zero.
None.
Yeah. So, your sister is likewise. Beautiful. How old is she now?
She's 22.
22. Yeah,
she just signed with one management, this guy named Scott Lips, who's actually got some pretty crazy rock history himself. He was Courtney Love's drummer in Hole for a while, and he started a modeling agency called One Management, and he's like this, you know, cultural figure now. He's
wow.
He's like a celebrity, and like he's got some of the biggest supermodels on his roster.
That's so crazy.
He's got a crazy history. Yeah, I hung out with him, Courtney Love, and Norman Reedus, actually, a friend of mine. Do you know Norman? He's the guy from The Walking Dead. He plays Daryl in The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. My buddy John Bernthal was on season one.
Yeah, and he's in Boondock Saints, and he's got a good, you know, and he's awesome. He's a real rock guy. But it was me, him, and Courtney Love, and we went to the SNL episode where One Direction played. So it was me, him, and Courtney Love, and then we meet the One Direction kids, Harry Styles, and things like that.
What year was that?
This was a couple months ago.
And you watched them lip sync?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because their music is definitely pop. Like, it's definitely a boy band.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that Harry kid definitely likes classic rock.
Right.
100%. You can tell by the way he dresses and what he posts on social media and stuff. I didn't know anything about him, and I met him, and I looked him up. He's obsessed with the Stones.
Oh wow!
He loves that stuff, and he writes.
Well, he looks like
songs.
Early Jagger, kind of.
Yeah, he's
like
got
Jagger
that. He's got that.
18.
He's got that British mod thing, and so, and they're very nice. Which, you know, you don't need to be nice. You can be like Bieber. You can be a dick and get away with it if you're that famous. And they don't. They were nice to every little person that walks in. Very nice, giving hugs and stuff. So, it's not my kind of music, but all kidding aside, I think more quote unquote pop stars, superstars should take a page out of their book and not be such dicks all the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's pretty bizarre how
they're literally the biggest, and they don't have to be nice. They really don't. Nothing would happen if they were mean to everyone. They would still be that successful.
Yep.
They choose to be very nice to people. So you gotta give them props for that.
I know all music, and even when it's shitty pop, people like that, you hear the stuff in restaurants or clubs or whatever. I don't know one of their fucking songs. Which
I know it only because I see them everywhere. You know, you're bombarded by images. But if you don't follow music, sometimes you don't know who sang what. But I know one or two just because of my sister and
your sister.
Honestly, unfortunately, because of the girls I date, which is unfortunate. Because
that where'd I'm you meet that girl? She's smoking. She a model?
Yes, I was just.
Who were those girls we were out with a couple nights ago? They were all 9 feet tall.
Yes, I was.
How is that possible?
She. I won't mention her name. I guess I don't know if I should.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, we just went to the gym actually a second ago, which I'm. Look, I may look like I'm skinny, but I'm what they call skinny fat. Like I'm dying.
How old are you?
I'm 26.
26.
This is my first year of going to the gym regularly. I used to go once or twice and then just fuck it.
Yeah.
But this time I'm trying to. I go to Equinox, which is it's the spoiled brat central of the earth. My reason for going there is because they overcharge you. Like it's too much money for. Yeah. It's really too much. I'm using that as motivation to go because if I'm paying that much every month, I better go.
Uh-huh.
So like it's kind of like me whipping myself. Like if I don't go, I'm out, you know, however many dollars a month. And I'm like, the Jew in me will not allow me.
It's like the Arclight to me. I go there at $16, $17 for a movie. I'd rather pay $20 a movie and weed out immediately anybody that goes $20. Just because I don't want any texters or talkers.
Although you'll get some in LA, of course. I don't know if people don't know if they aren't from LA. You'll get the people who are in the movie industry, producers and the like, going to movies and going, "Oh, that's terrible! I would have done so much." That's even worse. I'd rather have like the Joe Schmo going, "You're gonna fucking die!" You know, I'd rather have that than the guy going. Well, cinematography is not quite up to par here.
Out loud, you mean, during the movie?
I've had that more than once in this town, at the Arclight Hollywood and the Cinerama Dome.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, especially if they're like, they re-show Blade Runner and shit like that.
Oh, yeah.
You get the hipster snobs come in, the Hollywood cinema snobs, and I just can't.
Wow.
Cannot.
You know what's funny is everybody that sat on this couch... Every musician, and it really started with Cedric Bixler from at the Drive-In, Mars Volta, and now Antimatter.
Mars Volta, they're hella musicians.
Amazing.
I didn't just say hell, they're a hell of a pair of musicians.
Yeah.
Didn't say hello. I'm not from NorCal.
So he coined the phrase, Kiss is the gateway drug to rock and roll.
Really?
Yeah. So every, meaning every guy that sat on this couch, every guy go, so what was your first record? How'd you get into music? Every guy says Kiss.
You know, I do. Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess I hear a lot of guys in bands say that.
I think guys in my age, I'm 49, so if you're from 40.
I would shoot for Zeppelin before that, because I'm just a Zeppelin freak, and I think they were one of the first to do just the scope, the visual scope and scale of it all. Like, even Cream and Clapton didn't look like what we think of when we think of, like, rock star.
Yeah.
We think of long hair, we think of those dragon pants, you know, Jimmy Page.
Yep.
Double neck guitars. Like, everyone else kind of, like, I feel like everybody,
well,
I think everybody saw Zeppelin. Like, yeah. I think they created, you know, the hair, like 80s hair metal. I don't think that would have happened in any way if it hadn't been for, like, Zepp and big hair and maybe Sabbath.
Right. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, if you're probably 40 to 50 and you were going to junior high when I was, which I don't even know what year it was, you know, it's Kiss Alive 2. Yeah. Is the fucking Bible.
Two, really? Okay.
Well, yeah. Well, for me, it was live albums back then. It was Zeppelin's Song Remains the Same.
I mean, they edited those, but yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying, yeah, of course.
Well, because I know the story. He told me the story. Like, they did it, and then they listened back, and they had this horrible, this is Dad's story. I don't know, you know, who knows, but he talks a lot.
Alive too?
I think it was Alive 1.
Oh, and, yeah,
it's their
the
first try, and then they go back in the studio and they go, okay, let's hear it, you know, and it's just they can kind of hear the songs like, oh, this is bad. We just spent all this money, like we can't just throw this out. We have to use these. We spent all this money on this record. We got to just, like, see if we can salvage these.
Yeah.
So let's just fix them and just release it as Alive. And then it did. That was their first huge thing.
Absolutely.
But I heard they used the Super Bowl crowd on it. Yeah.
You know?
I wish they released the unedited ones just to show, like, okay, you guys wanted this, like, it's awful. Like, you can't hear it. So what do you want? Like, a good record or a totally, and they've done totally live records since that sound fine.
Yeah.
And I think they're better live than on their recordings, personally. I think still.
Really still.
Yeah, I think they're really tightly rehearsed. You know, they seeing the Motley Crue Kiss tour was interesting because Motley Crue is looser and more improvised. Like, they run around, they do whatever they feel like doing, except for, like, sort of Tommy's drum thing and certain stunts that they have planned. It's kind of just they run around, they do the songs, and, like, see what happens.
Yeah.
Kiss is a choreographed show. It's step by step. They know exactly where they're going to be at every point in every song.
Right.
They know when they're going to be. Paul has cues, and they know exactly what to do at each cue. So it's kind of, it's very much a streamlined machine. So that's, I think to get it, you got to, for people who have no idea, like kids, when I bring my friends to see it, they go, like, they say things like, oh, I had no idea that it was like that. I had no, you know, I thought it was a bunch of, he's like, my friend Dan, he's like a young guy, he's into whatever, all the cool stuff, and he's like, I'm going to be honest with you. I honestly thought it was just going to be a bunch of old guys like the Eagles or something like that.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I know those songs. It's great. But I had no idea it was such a thing, like such a spectacle. So
yeah,
if you don't like them, I think you'll still enjoy the concert. Even if you don't even like the music, it's like Cirque du Soleil. It's
I've seen them like 20 times.
Yeah.
You know, it's great, great, great shows, man. You know, when I was a kid, of course, you know, it was Kiss. Creatures. I love Creatures.
Yeah, I like Eric Carr.
Vinnie Vincent.
You like Vinnie Vincent? I don't know anything about him. I know him and my dad don't get along at all and haven't for years.
Yeah.
Like, really don't get along. So I don't actually think I ever met him in my conscious life. Maybe a little kid.
Right.
But, yeah, that's their beef. I don't know.
One of my best friends is Jacob Dylan. I've had.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like his work.
He's great, right?
Yeah.
I've had a lot of famous sons on. Dweezil Zappa, sons of famous people.
I met Dweezil and Moon Unit once because Dad and Frank wrote a song together once.
Oh.
he has this, Dad has this random solo album that is not very good, called Asshole. And he named it Asshole because I think halfway through he realized, like, no one's going to understand this because it's a bunch of random shit that I just haven't had room for and doesn't sound like Kiss. So he just threw a bunch of stuff together and put this album out. And I think halfway through he decided, like, let's just make this a joke. So he just made this stupid, like, pseudo fake rap video with him, and like he covered Firestarter.
Yeah,
and then Prodigy.
Yeah. I'm a fire sauna.
Yeah, he covered that song, and he put a bunch of random stuff on there. And on that album is a song he wrote with Bob Dylan, and a song he wrote with Frank Zappa. So these two, I think one of them is called "Waiting for the Morning Light." It's Bob Dylan wrote that with him at one point, and he has the tapes of them writing together to prove it. And he loves telling the story. If you listen to the tapes back, it sounds like this. Dad goes, "So, you know, I was thinking of moving into like a 7-chord here. What do you think? What do you think, Bob?" "So is that a yes or a no?" He could not understand a word he said.
Really?
And they were like, "Here, why don't you just show me?" He goes, "Okay." And then he plays a chord and he goes, "Oh, I see. Okay, yes, thanks." And then he just takes the guitar back and goes, "Right, got it. Okay. What do you think about this?" And he's really trying to be. This is, you know, he's a fan. He loves Bob Dylan, obviously. Yeah. Everyone does, and he's just like, okay, what? What did you just say?
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a comedy recording almost. Like, sounds like a skit. It sounds fake.
Is that on the actual record or on the tapes? It's on the.
He's got some tapes at home. I wish. I think he should release it personally, but so he did one with Frank too. And I don't remember what that one was called, but
amazing.
He basically asked Dweezil and Moon Unit to, like, if it was permission to finish it and stuff, because they wrote it together before he passed, and he didn't quite finish it.
That's so. Like two legends. Your
way
dad
back
has
in the
worked.
Day.
Yeah, that's insane.
He's got some weird stories about, you know, people he's
played.
He played. I don't know. I think he has a story about playing tambourine or something for Aerosmith, because they used to use Olympic Studios together and stuff.
Right. He also did the demos for Van Halen.
He loves to brag about them.
Yeah, you know what I always wondered was, nobody saw your dad back then, or nobody's faces, you know?
Yeah.
Which is one of the most incredible feats ever, because you could never do it now with TMZ and everything. There'd
Even Daft Punk, we do know what they look like, and Deadmau5, those guys.
My question is, how, when he first went and met him, could you imagine backstage, like, "Hi, I'm Gene"?
Yeah.
How would you believe it?
I mean, I guess the hair.
You
kind of see the outfit and you go, okay, he's probably telling the truth.
That's got to be weird, right?
You know, I met, when I was a teenager, I met Eddie Van Halen, and I walked up and I go, "Hi, I'm Gene's son. It's nice to meet you." And he goes, "Let me guess, he told you the story about he discovered us, right?" And I go, "I know, he likes to brag." And he goes, "Yeah, I mean, technically true, but I wish he'd shut the fuck up about it."
Wow. Eddie Van Halen said
go,
that?
And I go, like, and I go, "Yeah, me too." And he goes, "Yeah, you're all right, kid."
Oh, man.
So I was like, I must have been 15, something like that. It was me in the elevator, and Queensryche was behind me. So it was me, a couple of my little teenage friends, Queensryche. We all walked towards Eddie, and we shook hands.
And where were you?
At Stable, something like that.
Oh, I got you. Big, just going to a show.
Before the show. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Now, my point is, the guys that I know of all, you could go either way. You could be a complete drug addict freak, or you turn out, like I hang with you, turn out a great person, you know, or Jacob's a great person, Dweezil's a great person. Your dad didn't do drugs. Dweezil's dad
didn't
do drugs. So
Frank didn't?
No. And
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, which is wild, because at one point,
because he was at the center of the psychedelic culture.
Yeah, and Dweezil said at one point he was at a show very young, and he saw the fans were like on acid or whatever, and they're out of their minds. And he was like, "Dad, what's up with them?" And he's like, "Well, those people take drugs, so they act like idiots. If you ever want to try them, you can, but that's what you're going to act like." And they just never did them, none of the guys.
Frank Zappa really never did? I don't think a lot of people know that.
He did no drugs, man. He was just that far out on his own natural mind.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. I think that must be little known. I never knew that.
I'm sure with the full Zappa crowd, they know that, you know, but they enhance themselves for
He's
the
just
music.
Such a part of, you know, visually and the aesthetics they courted. He's just so part of that Jefferson Airplane, you know, look.
Yeah. Now, do you party at all?
No, I don't do any drugs, really.
Nothing?
No.
Really?
No. I mean, got stories that would probably get me in trouble legally with like once or twice, but I've never done any hard drugs. No coke, no LA drugs, really.
Right. How about your sister? She's clean too?
She's cleaner than I am. I've had a drink now and then.
Right.
Since I turned 21, which is probably the only person who's ever actually waited for the legal age in history.
Yeah.
Ever. It's the most useless. Who did a bit about that? Joe Rogan did a bit about that. He goes, it's the most useless law ever. I've never met anyone who waited till 21 in my life. Little church choir girl who's the goodest. She had a sip at 20. Stop.
Yeah.
Like everyone has
done.
If
you can fight a war, you should be able to drink. That's
silly. Yeah. One or the other. Raise the age or lower the. Raise 18 or lower 21.
You can't
it's very silly.
Fight for the country and not be able to drink.
Well, also, go to a strip club and be stone cold sober at the strip club staring at. A chick with a C-section and stories that would make your eyes bleed.
Yeah,
and then you go home and you go, I got to take the edge off. Yoo-hoo? No, you can't. You got to let him have a sip. Jeez.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
Skittles? Would you like some Skittles? Yeah.
What's your outlook on women? Your dad was with a million
girls.
He
knows to the number, I guess. And
that's crazy, right?
Well, I know why he knows the number, because he has Polaroids.
Yeah. Does he still have those?
I don't think he does. I think either mom made him throw them away or burn them or something, or she has them. Maybe she has them since the wedding.
Right.
But, my outlook on women is decidedly different. Again, it was the 80s. Like, it was as many as you can. Like, people think they're all hot. They're not all hot. They're not even mostly hot.
Yeah.
Like, just don't be too jealous. It's really okay. Like, touring is not,
It's so a different time now.
I'm a quality over quantity kind of guy.
Yeah, right? It's different time, though,
maybe,
right?
I don't know if my quantity is a lot or not compared to, guys I meet here, I'm the lowest. I know my number of women is the lowest in my group of friends. But they're whores, so I don't know. Like, they're man whores, so I have no idea. I don't know where I land on the scale, really.
Right.
If I'm average or above or not. But I don't really worry about that. I think the numbers game is for people who are extremely insecure and need validation. I don't think it matters.
Or your dad, like when your dad's
speaking of, yeah. No, he'll say it too. He was an immigrant kid, and like he was super insecure, so
yeah.
He compensated by. When he made his fame, he went on a rampage, and that's kind of how he reclaimed his. He wasn't cool in high school. That's what you do when you're not cool in high school.
Yeah.
I wasn't either, by the way. I was a total nerd.
It's pretty wild to think about that time.
I'm glad I wasn't cool in high school. Everyone who's cool in high school that I knew totally peaked in high school.
Really? Oh yeah.
Every
you're right.
single person I knew who was quote unquote the cool kids, they're doing. Fucking nothing right now. I swear to God, I've met them all again.
Yeah.
See them on Facebook. There's nowhere to hide. And literally the nerdy kids I know are like, have doctorates. And these other kids are like, I don't want to mention too much detail or mention any names, but like,
where'd
some
you go
of them
to school?
Are, I went to this school called Wildwood.
Oh, I know Wildwood.
Yeah.
All the celebrity kids go there.
Basically.
What
I went,
is that
I went
like?
To, well, first I went to public school until about seventh grade because we wanted to not do that. We wanted to not be,
out of Beverly Hills,
private and like special. My parents didn't want us to be in that environment. But when I started, when I passed 6 feet in sixth grade, I got like into some altercations. I went to Emerson Middle School, which is like a normal middle school. It's a public middle school, and
right.
I was the tall white kid that didn't play basketball, so I didn't really fare very well. Like I didn't get beat up or bullied really, but I didn't get along with anybody.
Right. They're calling you like tree.
No, they just like, they didn't get what I was. Like I'm not a sports guy. I don't like playing basketball or anything like that. And they didn't understand like, what the fuck do you do all day? And like, I don't know, read. Like, so I don't know. It's like this, it's not a income thing. It's not a, like an economic thing. It's more like a gender thing. It's like guys, testosterone. And like, they don't understand not being into when you're in middle school, they don't understand you not really trying to be a dude all the time. If you're not, like, there must be something wrong with you.
Yeah.
So I went to the private school and there was a bunch of hippie kids there, so I fit in just fine.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Like, what kind of celebrity kids were there?
I don't know if I should say. I mean, one of my good friends is Cooper Hefner, Hef's son, and Marston and Cooper. They're brothers, and I basically went to school with them my whole life, since preschool to through high school.
Wow.
And Cooper's a pristine gentleman. He's the best. He's the not train wreck celebrity kid. Like, he's the coolest guy ever. He's taken over the he's brand ambassador for his family's business now.
And oh, for Playboy?
He doesn't do drugs. He doesn't fuck around. He doesn't even hit on playmates. He has a steady girlfriend that he's had for years.
Wow.
Who is not a playmate in
what
any
a
way.
What a dummy, right?
He's just like, he defies all expectations of what you think a guy who grew up there would be like. He's very much an intellectual, yeah, and nothing at all like you think. And I think he's the new face of it, and he should be, because he's awesome. So,
how many times have you been to the mansion? I've only been
since
once.
I was a little kid.
Really?
Oh, yeah, like, I'm going this Easter, this Sunday.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the Sunday, the Easter.
I have a... I'll tell you a story about the mansion and Hef, actually.
I've been once.
This is how cool Hef is. He really is the coolest guy ever. You know, say what you will. Like, this is my experience of him. I was hanging out with one of the playmates. I won't mention a name at the time. This is a couple years ago. And I drove her home, and it was kind of getting late. It was after dinner or something. So I drove her to the mansion where she was staying at the time. And I ring the gate, and they say, you know, who is this? And I was like, hey, I got Miss, you know, Miss here, just letting you know. And they're like, who are you? I'm saying, oh, I'm Nick Simmons. I've been coming here for a long time. I know maybe you weren't expecting me today.
Yeah.
It's not an event. You know, they have a very special list of people who are on the forever list and for certain events, but it wasn't an event. Everyone was sleeping, and so they were cagey about it. They were like, okay, hold on a second. And they made me wait for a bit. And they eventually let me up. They were just a little confused about why I was there so late,
right,
without Cooper or anybody. And then the next night, I'm at dinner with my family. I was a teenager at the time, and 18, 19. And I get a phone call on the house phone. My mom picks up, and she goes, hey, how's it going? Yeah, he's here. And she goes, Nick, it's Hef. And I go, what? I pick up the phone, and it's Hugh Hefner, and he says, "Hey, I heard you had a little trouble at the gate the other night. I want you to know that you're family, and you can come anytime. And I'm sorry, so sorry, you had to wait.
Wow,
I had to wait like 10 minutes. It wasn't a big deal at all. He called me personally and said, I want you to know that I made sure you're on the list. You know, you're family, and dreadfully sorry, so sorry about that. And I said, it's really okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Hef, that's fine. Why are you being so nice to me? And I looked up, and mom's like, yeah, that's what he's like. Okay, well, thanks. And he goes, you know, we have movie nights every weekend if you want to come and watch some movies with us.
Wow.
We do two classic ones and one modern one on Sundays. So why don't you come on by and watch some movies? I said, okay, all right, bye. I hang up the phone. And, you know, I said, Mom, is that because of you or Dad? He goes, no, he's always been like that. He hates rudeness.
Wow.
He hates being rude people, and he hates unhospitality, which is actually why I think there's a lot of guests who frequent there who I think kind of take advantage of it. There's guys there who shouldn't be there, I don't think, because they were invited once, and Hef won't revoke an invitation because he considers it rude.
Wow.
Such a gentleman.
Wow, that's great. I went once on a...
Surreal.
It was a
phone call.
That's great. I went on my 40th birthday.
That's great. That's great.
So you know, it's like there's things in your life that you get, well, mansion, all right, check that off. The Magic Castle.
Yeah.
You did that.
I just did that last year.
Yeah,
for the first time. Yeah.
Great food there,
amazing,
man. Yeah. Couldn't believe it. But, you know, I go to the mansion, and I'm up there, and it's a full party. I think it's Hot August Nights or whatever it was.
Midsummer Night's Dream?
Yeah, everybody's
that's
in the
one. That's the one to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mansion gets a bad rep because what they do is sometimes there'll be companies who want to rent it out as a venue.
Totally.
Those are not the ones to go to.
No, those are the worst.
You want to go to the ones that Hef himself has hosted, because there's this class about them, and there's this great aesthetic. There's this, you know, this. I don't want to mention brand names because maybe they've been nice to me, but I don't like when other people rent out the mansion, because Hef has nothing to do with it, and when Hef has nothing to do with it, it kind of turns trashy and like not
Yeah, it's the worst because people are like, oh, I'm going to the mansion. I bought a ticket for $2,000 or whatever. It's like, well, that's not.
You shouldn't be able to.
That's not a half thing. That's just some rental.
Midsummer Night's Dream, sometimes, most of the time, it's he swaps. Sometimes he wants to do it, and lately he's just been like, someone else will do it. But when he
Haunted House one's the cool one where they go haunted house.
Halloween's great.
Halloween's pretty great.
They have an really elaborate haunted house, actually.
That's insane, right? You got to love L.A. It's just so insane, right?
People, you know, the rebranding they're doing is amazing, actually. And I know a lot of the girls who are a month Playmate this year because they're, you know, they've been models in their own right before, you know, Playboy even picked them up. So they're doing this whole rebranding thing. And I think actually a lot of the responsibility for that lies with this other guy who's a good friend of mine named Steve Shaw. He owns a magazine called Treats Magazine, which is... was the inspiration for Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines video. It kind of launched this girl, Emily Ratajkowski, something like that.
Right.
Her career kind of launched by Treats and a bunch of those. So he's kind of the new face of what – it's kind of an artsier kind of Playboy. It's a lot of nudity, but it's very – you know, it's fashion photography kind of. It's like Kate Moss nudity. It's like,
well, I think –
so Playboy's doing that too now. I mean, you look at the month – this year compared to a couple years ago – it's night and day. It's like classic Playboy again. It's like back to the golden age.
Oh, wow.
They're doing great. It's a lot of that's Cooper's doing, too. Cooper the son.
Yeah.
He's revitalized the brand.
Well, you remember back in when I was growing up, the excuse was, I look at it for the articles. And the once porn came out all over, the articles in Playboy are incredible.
They are.
And also, like, the album reviews were great and the movie reviews. And then the products, like, oh, get this new camera or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was great shit.
No, people don't know, if you haven't opened it, that it is a proper magazine. It just happens to also have some nudity in it.
It's
that's kind of what it is. They've had, I want to say Ray Bradbury, someone like that. Someone like a proper author who wrote a couple columns for them.
Yeah.
Lots of people like that. It'll be a Chuck Palahniuk and people like that. It's
great shit in there.
Prestigious,
you know?
Authors who have written stories, and there's so I've been trying to get in there, honestly, because I that's what I do. I'm a writer. I write for the Huffington Post.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, I didn't
that's
even
what
know
I went. That's what I went to college for.
Wow. What college did you go to?
I went to Pitzer College, a small liberal arts college in Pomona.
Oh, wow.
My chief reason for going there was because there was no Greek life. I fucking hate frat dudes. I can't do it.
Oh.
I don't hate frat dudes. I hate frat culture. Let's say
right,
that.
Right.
I don't want to be branded. I don't want to wear a toga. I want to fucking fuck off. Let me do my essay. You know, I don't want to.
When I was young, I saw Animal House and I thought, ooh, I want to be a frat.
Yeah, you think you do. You think really you do.
You're like, you see like John Belushi and you see those guys.
Looks like a great fun. I saw.
You go, ooh, yeah. And then you go, oh.
Old school, Will Ferrell.
Frat guys suck.
No, it's a bunch of, it's fucking kind of,
it's just crazy.
Meet a frat guy one-on-one and then you'll be like, oh. So it's a lot of you. Got
it. Yeah, frat guys are usually like really rich parents that
like
hate
I said,
their kid, and they just send them off, so they're miserable, and they become like these idiot people. You know,
well, it's like those middle school kids, the testosterone macho thing. Like
if you're not a lot of high fiving,
you're not into a lot of fucking high fiving. A
lot of high fiving
over what? A burrito, hooray!
Bro.
Yeah, you know, those are $5. You know, bucks. You can easily get those any day. No, yeah.
So.
Day
let's,
raping.
Let's talk
gross.
A little bit about reality shows. You guys did one. Osbournes did one. There's a lot of that going on.
Osbournes were the sort of pioneers of it.
Right.
Really.
What year is the first? How old are you when the cameras first come in?
I must have been 16.
Were you like, oh, this is going to suck, or were you on board?
No, I wasn't really conscious enough to realize what I was doing. I just said, okay, well, summer job. Great.
Yeah.
And I get my own income. That's good. So when I agreed to it, I don't even really knew what I was agreeing to. You know, I was a kid. But we did it for 7 years. So
7 years.
I basically grew up on that thing. it's like 22 when it ended. I'm 26 now. So, yeah, I'm actually in negotiation for a different kind of one soon.
Yeah.
My sister and I are both separately in negotiations for two separate shows.
Two different shows.
Yeah. Well, mine would be based around music because I'm recording in Nashville. And, it's going to be about that. It's this company called Buena Murray. They did the Kardashians, so they're a pretty big, powerful,
right?
You know, team of people. But they assure me that, you know, and this isn't all official yet. We're talking.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't say too much because ink's not on paper. But
yeah, I get you.
They this guy named Jeff Jenkins, who's a great guy. We're talking about doing a show. That's something to do with music. And that's really what I have been doing and want to do. And I want to finally record something and put something out. Because I haven't, because I was so afraid of, you know, I didn't want to take advantage of my position. And at the same time, it's what I wanted to do. And, I got all this guilt about like, oh, you know, you have an unfair advantage because you were on a show. Or, you know, you have it's a really disadvantage because you were on a show because people are going to write you off.
That's right.
And
when you have a famous dad,
it took me. Yeah, and like a famous dad, so you're going to get lots of attention, or also you're going to get the wrong kind of attention. Like it's a total double-edged sword.
Yeah.
And at this point, I kind of finally realized that I don't care. I just want to do it, so I don't care. I don't care how it does. If I'm touring and I'm last on the bill, that sounds fun to me. So,
what kind of music?
It's blues based, but produced well enough to be accessible. I mean, I love this new guy. You ever heard this guy? This guy did the song "Take Me to Church," Hozier.
Nope.
This song is great. This guy's a Beatles-esque songwriter. This guy.
Really?
He's old school. You got to listen to this album. It's got blues to the root. This guy.
And where's he at?
But he's got this soulful voice, and I don't know where he's Irish, I think.
Right.
But he was Grammy nominated this year, and he just came out of nowhere. This guy, he's just like this skinny Irish guy. I think he's Irish. But this album is fantastic, and that guy inspired me. The Black Keys. The Black Keys. Patrick is a friend.
Yep. What about
I just love anything with a blues bass, but actually managed
Raconteurs.
To like
Raconteurs.
Yeah, I mean Jack. Anything Jack does. I like Dead Weather more than Raconteurs, to be honest.
That's funny. We were talking about that because that's the project I don't like the least, and I love White Stripes. I love the Raconteurs.
White Stripes is my favorite. I mean, yeah, it's unbelievable. The White Stripes. Yeah. Dace Digil is my favorite album. So that's that.
And then even his new solo record is phenomenal. You know,
I like the solo record. I think he's distancing himself from the White Stripes on purpose, and also he accuses the Black Keys of ripping him off, which I don't agree with really, because neither one of them were first to be a blues duo, a lo-fi blues duo. There's been a thing,
yeah,
since time began.
There was a
riff
great one from the 70s. I heard
E-scale pentatonic riff blues rock.
Yeah.
Is not a new invention. It's an old thing done well.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. So if you're going to talk about ripoffs, we can talk about Led Zeppelin all day long. I love them to death. They're my favorite band of all time. And yet you have to admit, they fucking stole like bandits. And I don't think the motivation for that stealing was malevolent or bad intentioned. I just think Plant loved Sonny Boy Williamson so much that he wanted to be him. Like I think Page loved Burt Jansch so much that he wanted to be him.
Right.
And I don't think they were really thinking about it, and they probably had a manager talking in their ear that said, don't write the names, don't give them royalties, just go, go, go. No one will ever hear these little blues guys. I think, you know, the British bands spent their entire histories doing blues covers. That's how they got famous.
The Stones
in
did
clubs,
the blues covers.
They all did blues covers.
The Who, all those guys.
I don't think they thought about it. I think Page and Plant just loved those blues guys. And so it must have been horrifying for them when they got... And by the way, don't get me wrong, they should have paid up. It is a good thing they got called out and paying the royalties to Willie Dixon. So that's a good thing.
Right.
But for people to throw away Zeppelin because they stole a bunch of stuff is to kind of miss the point. They stole in the Jim Jarmusch way. They, because they just wanted to be these were their heroes. They wanted to be their heroes. And if that's not the purest motivation for creating anything, I don't know what is. Like so if they were called out for it being too close, that is a good thing. They should have been called out for that. But to hate them for that reason, I think is stupid.
Well, I think
you should tell them like, hey, give credit where credit is due, and they should go, okay. Do it out in the open, and they should all be happy that they popularized blues music. I mean,
at the end of the day, you're probably talking about five songs on their eight records or whatever.
I wish that was true.
Well, I mean, you know.
Every song on the first album besides Good Times, Bad Times.
Well, yeah, what is it? Like seven or eight songs
and
or whatever.
And Since I've Been Loving You. And
well, yeah, Since I've Been
Whole Lot
Days
of Love,
Confused.
Days and Confused, Pete Holmes. And I've got a playlist of all of it. I'm a Zeppelin fanatic. I know all the trivia.
But what I'm saying is later on.
Oh, yeah.
When you
four,
listen,
after
you're
four,
like,
yeah.
Where the fuck did these tunes come from?
Way beyond.
You know? It's insane. You
even
know?
Stairway to Heaven. It's a band called Spirit.
Yeah, they're going through that right now, that whole front piece.
And Pete Holmes, yeah. And that's good. They should go through it. They should go through it. It should all be public. They should pay up where credit is due. And no one should hate Zeppelin because of it, I don't think.
I don't think anybody does, do you?
There are people who have been like, you know what? I used to love this band, but I fucking can't love Ripon. It's like, it's like that Robin Thicke verdict lately with Marvin Gaye.
Right.
And the Sam Smith thing with Tom Petty. Yeah. I don't agree with throwing out these artists, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I think it's good to point it out and to give credit where credit is due and pay up and sort of cease and desist. But I think that's where a lot of songs we love come from, trying to be your heroes.
Yeah.
Trying to copy your heroes.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly.
I mean, you know, a lot of bands I think sound like AC/DC.
I think that's where most of it comes from. I mean, so to say that you should never do that, that line between ripping someone off and emulating or taking inspiration is not clear cut. Yeah. It's really wide and it's blurry as fuck. So
I
think it should be a conversation constantly, and I don't think anyone should throw the baby out with the bathwater unless it's really proven that this guy was trying to undermine these artists, steal from them, and make money
right
at their expense. If that was the motivation, sure. But if the motivation was, I fucking love, you know, X, Y, and Z, Sonny Boy Williamson, I wish I could be him, I'm going to try to sing like him, I'm going to try to sing like Steve Marriott, I can't hate a guy who, you know, happened to go a little too close to his hero because he wanted to be him so bad. It's a 21-year-old kid.
I trip on lip syncing.
I'm not a fan of that at all.
I just do not fucking understand.
To me, it's a moral thing about the ticket price, personally. Well, what did you pay to see?
Are you there for, you know,
singing.
Yeah. I remember when I was younger, they passed a law, and I talked about it. No one seems to talk about it. For, I think, like a couple years, if you were going to have lip syncing, they started it on the Janet Jackson tour.
Really?
You had to put, there's pre-recorded vocals on the ticket. This is like...
That's a good law.
Yeah. Right?
I like that law.
But you know what? I don't think anyone cares.
Because it's truth and advertising. No one cares. That's the only reason that law is not still kicking,
that's right.
I think so. I think people should care because... It's false advertising.
If you're
selling a live show and it's not a live show, it's false advertising.
Well,
couldn't get away with that shit with a product on TV.
I don't understand. It's like buying a Ferrari and then you get it outside and it has no motor.
Yeah, or just a Honda motor. It's got a different motor.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it's being pulled by horses that you didn't know were there. You got to clean the shit.
But if the artist can keep doing it and the fans don't say anything, they're, of course, just going to be lazy forever. They're going to be like,
Dad's been a big vocal guy about that.
It's not crazy.
Pun intended, vocal guy.
Right. Yeah.
But, he hates lip syncing, and he's said some shitty things about it to people. A lot of these pop stars, really, they sing well. I don't know why you don't sing. Like, you can do it. People clearly can do it because people have been doing it for years.
Yeah.
Why is it? Are you that lazy? Like, I don't think that's very ethical at all.
I think it's just fucking horrible when they try to use the dance excuse too. Well, I'm moving around so much.
Jagger moves plenty.
Jagger moves like a maniac.
James Brown moves a lot.
Yeah. So
you seen James Brown do that moonwalk on one foot? Fuck off. You're dancing too much.
I know, right? It's just crazy. Well, I mean, look at Kiss. They're in costumes and there's hot fire.
And by the way, it's going to sound a little different. It won't sound exactly like the recording. But why the fuck? Yeah, that's what you want. Don't you want to see it live?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
I want to see him as a human being singing these songs that he wrote. Holy shit. Like, this guy did... This song that I know and have known for years, he's singing it with his own voice, and he actually made it. Like, it doesn't seem real when it's a backing track.
I don't understand outside writers.
You know, another thing, the writer thing.
Yeah,
when an artist wins best album, that's why everyone raised Cain about Beyonce and Beck. This best album of the year Grammy nomination when Beck won, and I was arguing with somebody about it, and I actually agree with Kanye. I think. This particular Beyonce album was better than this particular Beck album. However, how many writers did she have and how many writers did he have?
Yeah.
He wrote the entire thing and has always written all of his
material.
She had
like 84 writers.
Something, you know,
like
seven
30,
composers.
37 producers.
So, I'm not saying she didn't deserve to win best album. I'm saying when she wins best album, there should be seven people up there.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. Absolutely.
Because it's not best performer or best performance, then that's just her.
Yeah.
If it's best album... who made the album.
Yeah, yeah.
They could have done what Mark Ronson did. Mark Ronson hired Bruno Mars as his singer. It's Mark Ronson's album. He wrote the shit.
Yep.
Bruno Mars sang for him. That's why it's Mark Ronson featuring Bruno Mars. Beyonce's album should be, you know, what's his name?
Pharrell, all those guys.
You know, Red One featuring Lady Gaga. That's what it should be because they didn't write it. And I'm not a hypocrite. I think the same thing about Elvis. Elvis didn't write his shit.
Yeah.
And I think when they say, "Well, you like Elvis, you don't like Elvis as much as the Beatles." Yeah. Beatles wrote their own shit.
Yeah.
So yes, I do give them more credit than I give Elvis. I think they did the work. They deserve more credit.
Well, also, at the end of the day, the only way you make money is from the songwriting. Yeah. You know, as far as sales, you know what I mean?
Just from an artistic point of view, it's just like those award shows clearly are businesses made. You know, they want to get celebrities on the stage because who's the Swedish guy? Max Martin, that wrote everything since the beginning of time. This guy wrote all the pop hits, you know, since the Backstreet Boys till now. Like, he's written from the Backstreet Boys to Katy Perry today. He's written all those hits, and it's... He got his like first Grammy this year, something crazy like that.
That's wild, right?
And he should be up there 20 times a show.
Yeah.
Because he wrote for everyone.
Yeah.
Why isn't he up there 20 times a show? Because
it's
people
business.
Tune in when it's not him, when it's Katy Perry up there. People tune in when it's... Because that's... Little girl, you know, 13-year-old girls don't care who wrote the song. Or they don't even know. I don't think they even know.
No, they don't know.
They have no idea. Well, I met people who think Britney Spears wrote her own stuff.
Yeah, that's lunacy. And then it was funny when she went to Vegas, they were like, "Oh yeah, she's going to sing." And then the first show she didn't sing. And
to me, there's nothing wrong with someone else writing your own shit as long as you say so.
Well, yeah.
And like, give them credit where credit is due publicly.
Like Pink and what's her name? You know, Linda Perry wrote their hits. What's her name? Christina Aguilera. Yeah. And they, right when they're grabbing the statue, say, "I wouldn't be up here without Linda Perry writing a beautiful song like Beautiful."
Yeah, there you go.
And then even has Linda Perry play at the Grammys with her.
Yeah.
Now we're talking like, oh, okay, this is a collaboration of a great voice and a great songwriter.
Yeah, even Taylor Swift. I mean, Taylor Swift, you know, writes, but she has writers with her. And I think those writers should walk up there with her. When you get Best Picture at the Oscars, the whole shebang walks up there. The star, the director, the producers, they're all up there. There's a big crowd. And I think that would be visually really interesting to see who walks up with a big crowd and who doesn't. If they had to bring up the songwriters with them, think about that.
Yeah.
Whenever a pop star wins, there'd be a big crowd. Whenever someone like Beck would win, he would walk up alone.
Yeah.
How fucking gangster would that be?
The moment
that guy walks up and goes, "Yeah, no, that was just me. So big fuck you to everyone."
Like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And Paul McCartney walks up there alone.
Yeah.
Goes, "Yeah, that was just all me, so
I think,
you know, suck my English ball sack."
I think when they win too, they should bring instruments up and play them while they're accepting the award. Like, "Hey, check this
out." That's cruel and unusual punishment. I'm not
this
gonna...
this is an acoustic guitar right here.
I don't know, but wouldn't it be interesting
if
just every award show, everyone who did the work had to be up there?
Yeah.
I think it would probably incentivize, you know, some pop stars to actually maybe try to write, see if they can do it. I want to see one of those pop stars try,
right,
to write a hit.
Oh, there's no
alone.
There's no fucking way because
it could be. I mean, and by the way, even if they succeed, I'd be like, doesn't that feel better?
Right,
you did that. How fucking good does that feel?
Well, now you got street cred,
and now you can justify that private jet.
Yeah, when they go, "I love that song," they have to just say thanks. You know how weird that is?
Yeah,
I love that song.
He's like, "Oh, your song got me through this." It's like, I were them, I would say,
"My vocal.
Thanks. Actually, you know, Max wrote that, so you should really thank him.
Yeah.
I performed his song."
Yep.
I think that's a matter of, even I have to give props to some of the rap community too. Rappers write their own shit.
Yeah, they do.
You gotta like Jay-Z writes his own fucking lyrics.
Right.
As far as I know. You know, and there's tons of pop stars that don't write any of their stuff.
I had my tweet got the tweet of the week on At Midnight.
Did it.
And the tweet,
I love Chris. Chris is a friend.
Yeah, right. The topic was Grammys in 5 words. And mine was best stolen Tom Petty song.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah.
It killed.
You know what's funny? I don't agree with those verdicts because Tom Petty's song, there's an article, I think, it might have been in Rolling Stone, the website or whatever. It was an article about how simple his songwriting is.
Right.
and how almost impossible it is to avoid ripping him off, because that Sam Smith thing, won't back down, stay with me, it's descending thirds.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the most rudimentary, basic caveman song structure thing possible. Like, there's probably a million songs that do that. I don't think...
Well, I think it gets...
I don't agree with that verdict at all.
I think when it gets into the chords with a melody,
yeah,
that the melody... Now... Of course, you could play the three chords, and you could have sang, like, you know, if it's like, I won't back down, you know, whatever it is. It could have been like, look out for me again, or whatever, you know, a different melody, yeah, and you would have never even thought about it.
Yeah.
Or the melody over different chords, yeah, vice versa, you know?
Yeah.
But I tell
it's
you...
That's such a gray area. Like, when I heard Sam Smith Stay With Me, I didn't actually think of it, and when I heard it together, I go, it's like, technically, it's the same shape, but yeah. I don't...
Well, a lot of Oasis songs sound just like Beatles, and they never got, you know.
There's so many. Like, every artist we know, there's at least one example. Even the Beatles ripped off Muddy Waters and everybody. Like, because I don't think they ripped them off because, like, oh, I'm going to rip off this guy.
No.
I think they loved Muddy Waters.
Yeah. Well, I think also,
yeah,
you're writing something, and...
English kid in Liverpool was like, I want to be just like that cool black guy.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. And then people are like, you ripped him off. Like, what? No, I thought...
Well, you have the internet.
I thought
now,
I was trying
too.
To be cool.
You have the internet now, so it's instant evil. You know what I mean? Boom, boom.
Must have been a weird moment when he goes like, oh, they think I'm ripping him up. I guess I was. But I thought I was just trying to be cool like him. He was my hero. And he like, has this little tear in his eye. Poor,
that's crazy.
Poor kid. You know, I don't know. Not poor, you know, poor Beatles. I'm sure they're fine. But
yeah.
I don't know. It must be a weird moment because you can just, when you really love these bands like Led Zeppelin, and you hear their interviews, you can really tell how much affection they have for the blues.
Oh, absolutely. And they know everything about it.
Yeah, they just, and Plant, you know, goes to Sonny Boy Williamson's grave.
Yeah.
Like, you don't do that if you're trying to rip somebody off. Like, yeah, he just wanted Plant's to, he amazing. Wanted to be him.
I love Plant.
So that, the intention behind that is not evil, and I can't throw him under the bus for it.
Yeah,
just can't.
Oh, I'll never do that. I mean, you know, that guy's he's a.
They're guilty, and they should be found not guilty. You know what I mean? Like, they are guilty of ripping off. They should give their dues, and they should walk free.
Yeah,
of the jail of public opinion, because it's silly.
Are you into records? You buying vinyl?
Yeah, I have a meager vinyl collection. Yeah, not very good.
Right,
flea market stuff.
Flea market stuff.
Yeah. I don't have any like first presses. Although I do, I brought my computer because I do have, I met Jimmy Page in New York once.
Whoa.
By chance and almost cried. And
how long ago was this?
This was 2-3 years ago.
Yep.
And I had worked with Eddie Kramer before on some demos. Eddie Kramer was their engineer.
Yeah, I heard
their
he was
out
in the
for
Valley
a while.
Or something.
Yeah, he lives here.
I've been
lives
trying
here.
To get him on the show.
You should. I'll tell him you. I'll
Please.
Tell him yes.
That'd be great.
Yeah, we did some demos together, and it ended up working. I re-recorded since. It ended up working out. I'll probably work with him again. But
what'd that sound like? Was it classic rock?
Yeah, when I was working with him, yeah. I've changed what I want to do lately. It's like my first record is like Chinese Democracy. It's like it's never going to come out.
Yeah.
It's like,
is that the band you had on TV that I saw at the NAMM show or whatever?
Did oh no, dude! I was like 17. That's like my high school band.
Okay, so
new
you had
guys
that band.
Completely. No, yeah, that was.
And then you start another.
That was one of like five bands I had in high school. It's
right.
Like just for fun.
And now you, the band
that was on the show
that you did with Eddie Kramer, that
was never televised. Right? That was
but
after
I know,
the show.
But was it like a real band?
Yeah, I mean it was. Yeah, bass, drums, guitar. Yeah.
And what was it called?
We didn't have a name. I still don't. I might just be me
right.
with my writing partner, Vinny. Who he and I write half and half the stuff. We don't know. We'll see what happens. But
you gonna play any gigs?
Not until we release something.
Of course,
it'll be yeah. We're trying to make it a finished product before anybody sees it.
So you work with Eddie Kramer?
I've kept it completely under. I haven't talked about it anything because I don't want to talk about it until I'm ready. And I don't even know how much interest there is. But I it's something I want to do and I have to do and I've been doing. And I've changed it and changed band members a bunch of times over and over. And I think I found a good group of guys this time, and I think I'm ready.
And what are they? Are they young guys? Or
young guys, yeah, my age, yeah,
right.
20s. So I met Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
And he said, I heard about you from Eddie. You know, I heard you guys are doing something. And I said, what? You've heard my name? Maybe, you know, fucking had heart palpitations. And then when I went home, Dad said, Nick, you got some mail. Bring it over to your house. And he brought over the CD, and he goes, this is from Jimmy Page. This is his private collection of bootlegs and demos.
Oh,
I have him writing Stairway.
Yeah?
I have him playing at the Whiskey in 69 for
five people. I got
that. It's
incredible. Yeah. That's incredible.
I have him covering when they were called, I have them playing a live show when they were called the New Yardbirds, playing covers of Howlin' Wolf and shit.
Right.
I have two discs full of this private stuff. And I was like, he sent this to me? He's like, yeah, I told him you were a big fan. That's the way my dad talks to me when I'm flustered. He goes, yeah, whatever. I'm like, stop being so nonchalant about this. This is a big deal for me.
Does your dad like Zeppelin?
Oh, he loves.
Dad's
three great loves, I think I'm going to.
Beatles, of course.
Beatles is his number one. Zeppelin and Jeff Beck.
Jeff Beck, wow.
Yeah, he loves those. Those are the ones.
What kind of dad is he? Was he strict? Is he
strict when he needed to be, but he wasn't. My parents always talked to us like we were adults, which I think is a good idea.
Do you call him Gene or Dad?
No, I call him Dad.
Yeah, because
I call him Dado. In my phone, I have him as His Excellency Lord Prince Dado. That's because, you know, he thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
That's a great thing. I think that people shit on him because of that. And I think
I like shitting on him. It's fun.
I know. But I think, and I'm not like, I grew up and worshipped Kiss when I was young, but I wasn't one of those grown men right now that are like, ooh,
I love you.
Yeah. But I think he gets a lot of flack for no reason because he's successful. I know what people don't.
Well, no, I wouldn't say it's for no reason. He said some weird shit. I think he gets a lot of flack because here's one thing people don't really know about him. Even though he speaks very well and clearly, he does have trouble communicating. And I think that's just the result of him English is not his first language, and he also speaks a couple languages.
Yeah.
So I think he oversimplifies things and talks in stereotypes a lot. And he does kind of need a translator, honestly, because he'll say some shit that I really don't agree with, and I know he doesn't agree with, but what he said is very clear, and I go, Dad, I know you don't mean that. You mean this. He goes, well, yeah, I was just, you know. And I go, no, Dad, you can't just, you know. You have to actually clarify that because people are going to fucking crucify you. And he goes, well, you know, that's just the way. He's like, you ever seen Gran Torino with Clint Eastwood?
Absolutely.
That's how he is. Like, what? No, but like, he's the thing about that character is like, he wasn't racist. He goes, that's just how guys talk to each other.
Yeah.
He's just an old school guy, and he talks in stereotypes, and he doesn't 100% mean all of it. Like when he says, well, you know, women are like this. He doesn't literally mean that.
Yeah.
He means it like a guy talks to his barber. Like that's how he just thinks that's how you talk. And in the age of the internet, he doesn't understand direct quotation. He doesn't get it.
Right.
So watch Gran Torino again. And when you see like he'll get him go to his barber and he brings the Asian kid with him. And he goes, hey, how's it going, you Mick? You know, the guy's like a Irish guy. And he goes, hey, you motherfucker. And they talk to each other.
Yeah.
And the kid realizes, like, oh, every time he's called me like a, you know, a racial epithet for an Asian guy.
Yeah.
That's just how he talks to people. And he's not there's a thing they're talking about now in, you know, liberal circles about racism without racists. Like, there's a culture of that we're just indoctrinated into talking a certain way. But you actually sit that person down and they don't actually hate anyone.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of how they talk, and that's just kind of how they were raised to think the world talks.
Well, yeah, like Louis C.K. says, old people,
Louis C.K. is more self-aware than Dad.
But I'm saying Louis C.K. says old people, you know, it's so true. When you go to your grandma's house, they say stuff and you're like, whoa, grandma. Yeah.
And
know?
Some of those, it's funny because some of those people are racist. And like, it's hard to determine which ones are just playing that language game of how they grew up or which ones actually are. A lot of them actually are. Dad is just a guy who doesn't communicate well, and he gets a lot of flack for it. He says sexist things. He says really sexist things.
Yeah.
But I know what his actual views are because I've really grilled him on it. And so I know when he says sexist things, he's overtly generalizing because he likes snappy, quotable things.
Right.
And he's saying, when he says, like, well, you know, women are blank, what he means is, well, statistically, most women, based on this poll, blah blah blah, and the reason for that is a culture of sexism. You know, like that's the actual reality of it. There's a why when he says like he'll say something shitty about black people. Like he said weird things about like well, statistically, you know, crime, blah blah blah, black people, and it sounds really terrible. And I know he's not racist because I know him.
Right.
but what he said is racist as fuck. and I'm like, Dad, you have to actually pick that apart a little bit, because people don't just know you and, oh, I know what he means. Yeah. No one knows what you mean.
Yeah. How old is
he? So he's 60s.
60s.
You know, he's fucking old. He's fucking old.
Well, you know, it's a strange time because the 60s, the actual 60s, yeah, they call it the free love and everything. Then 70s is kind of like this really weird thing. But what people don't understand, and I'm 49, 80s was strictly about sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah.
Like, it was men and women were getting together at concerts, experiencing fun and fucking and being completely loose about it.
Yeah.
And now, that era of people, let's say you interview an older rocker, like, say, a Don Dokken or somebody, let's just say from that era.
You know, do you want to see something funny?
Yeah.
Ashlyn Dokken was my first girlfriend.
Oh, really? His daughter?
I met her at a Steel Panther show in middle school when they were called. You know, I was in that.
Right.
Ashlyn. She's got a kid now. I haven't spoken to her in years.
Wow.
It's my first girlfriend.
Well, I do that bit about 80s rock and stuff, and I came out of the club one night, and this girl came up. She was beautiful, like a 10, and she goes, oh, my God, you were so funny. My dad needs to see you. He was in an 80s band. I go, oh, that's who good. Was it? And it was Dana Strum's daughter.
Dana Strum. Why do I know that?
The bass player in Slaughter.
Okay. See, I don't actually know a lot about
it. Yeah, right. I get it. But it's just funny because all these famous rockers who fucked millions of girls have beautiful daughters
now.
Yeah.
Oh, don't
like
believe
your
me.
Dad
yeah,
has
believe
a beautiful
me. The
daughter. And
the
it's like,
irony.
Fuck.
The irony is not the poetic justice is not lost on us. We tease him about it all the time. I go, hey, Dad. You know your little princess is going on a date with so and so tonight. He goes, I don't want to. I don't want to hear. my mom goes, why? Because you remember what you were like on dates. He goes, yeah. I don't.
Oh.
He goes, son, go spread your seed. You go to a nunnery, like.
Dude.
I go, Dad. You know that's a double standard. He goes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it is. What's your point?
Your dad never got married till recently, right?
2011.
2011. He hated.
I was the best man.
You're the best man.
Well, he got caught cheating. Of course he got married.
He got caught cheating.
Yeah, he's on the show. This is all on the show.
I didn't see that.
He got caught.
Oh,
my mom fucking busted his balls.
Yeah, was it photos and a phone or something? Or
I don't know. I don't actually know. I didn't. You know, I stay far away from Google. I never Google anything. Just since I was a little kid, I just never really. And I think I think that's the only reason I'm normal.
Let me ask you something. Wasn't it an understanding when they got together that he goes on the road, fucks girls?
Nope.
It wasn't?
No, sir.
Really?
Nope.
So why?
My mom would never agree to that. And, you know, it wasn't the whole time. It was he got into this midlife crisis age where he slipped. And you know, she caught him and she demanded to know everything. He told her everything. I don't actually know the details because it's my parents.
Totally.
I just know there was infidelity. And my mother had a brilliant idea, you know, after she stopped wanting to fucking murder him.
Yeah.
she really did. And this is all on the show. And people don't believe that season, you know, producers fudge the details about reality shows all the time.
Of course.
You know, they have to stick scenes together and make them make sense. So we've had to do these things called pickup shots where, like, they filmed us doing a bunch of stuff. But in order for it to make sense, we have to have you come in and say, here's what we're doing today.
Yeah.
Or else this doesn't make sense. So we've done that. But this last season with the wedding and all that, that was fly on the wall. We didn't fake shit like that. And people don't believe it. They think that was the most fake because it was dramatic. And
she
stayed
with it.
It was like a soap opera. This was all real. So what her brilliant idea was... Before the show filmed anything, before anything came out to the media, when it was totally private and she had just caught him, she said, here's the deal. I'm not going to tell anyone. I'm just going to go. And we can say we parted amiably and you will save face and you will still have everything and I won't take any of your money. I'll take what I came here with. Kids will be fine. They're all grown up already. I'm just going to go. Or you can marry me.
Wow.
Either one. Either way, no negative consequences to you whatsoever. And so I was like, Mom, why did you do that? You could have taken it for all his worth. He definitely deserved it. Like, he deserved, you know, something. And she goes, no, because if he chose to marry me then, I would never know why.
Yeah, you're right, because you think that he's saving his money.
So when he chose to
propose to keep her, they call it.
Yeah, when he chose to marry her, he was not under threat of divorce settlements at all. He was not under threat of taking all money, despite her lawyer going, "You need to take him for all this." Like, yeah, he screwed you over. You're in the right. Every one of her friends was like, "You need to fuck that. He's an asshole." Blah, blah, blah. She was like, "No, I'm gonna walk away, wash my hands of it, and just let him be, and no one will know."
Wow.
And he proposed to her because he said, "Like I said, she said, and by the way, we'll be friends. We're fine. Everything is fine. No negative consequences.
Wow.
You can go on the road and be a rock star and live this life that you seem to want to lead. Or you can marry me, but that means you have to settle down and you have to give me the password to all your emails."
Whoa.
So pick one, she said. Literally pick one, and yeah, either way, we're good. And he proposed to her. So yes, that he left it up, she left it up to him. And I said, "Mom, you have the patience of a saint." And she goes, "Yeah."
Oh, my God.
So I think she was brilliant, and I've never seen anyone have that much self-control.
That's pretty fucking
and
strong,
she,
right?
I was like, fuck, you are a... So that's why she's kind of, later in life especially, she's kind of my role model.
Wow, that's great.
Hell of a willpower play there.
That's incredible, right?
Can you imagine if my girlfriend, I discovered she, like my life partner I'm living with, cheated on me. I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I'd be like, fuck, who are they? I'm going to fucking murder them. I'm going to take you for all your worth.
Yeah.
How dare you, you know.
It's pretty brutal. I always tell people, don't cheat on your lady. You know, I think most
just don't
people,
have a lady if you want to.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Not
you
in
live
your,
that life.
Not
fuck
in your dad's world, because in that world, neither of us are going to know that world of at all times there's just vagina around. You know?
I'm not trying to brag, but you'd be surprised how far removed you can be from actual fame and still get attention.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's weird.
Yeah.
You should see my Instagram. Go look at it. It's fucking, there's some people who I can send a text now.
Yeah.
Not, I shouldn't because they're gross, but yeah, I can, if I wanted to do that.
Uh-huh.
And so can someone who's even farther down the rung than I am. Like I'm, you know, I'm second degree.
Yeah.
You know, related to somebody who's pretty well known.
Yep.
It's especially in LA, you can really get it done. I'm sure you can. Dude, you're on any man with a, what Jack White said, any man with a microphone can tell you what he loves the most.
Yeah,
it's a lyric. Doug Stanhope did a bit about how if you get on stage in any sort of art way, you can fuck out of your weight class. And it's just the way it is.
I'm the exception, man.
I don't believe you.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you.
Those girls we ate at that diner were eating it up.
Yeah.
You were Mr. Charming.
Yeah, but they don't want to fuck. You know what I mean?
You don't know that at all. I think you've probably missed opportunities to sleep with beautiful women because you didn't think they were into you, and I think they were.
No. I think
they've been like, "Oh, I guess he walked away. He was being really funny. He was the center of attention, and I got carried away, and I just,
I think the ones I like don't like me. That's the problem.
I don't think you're right.
I'm telling you.
I think you and I and every guy out there misses cues because women speak in code sometimes, and we're not good at deciphering codes. I am no Alan Turing. I cannot decipher. I need it to be, "Hey, I like you. Kiss me." Like, I need that to be on the nose. I need
that, too. It's just a text.
You know what's funny? I've never, I'm lucky in a lot of ways, and I try not to be a dick about it, but I've never actually hit on a girl at a bar or, like, initiated a conversation. The only reason I'm not a virgin today is probably because of my height, because that's a conversation starter.
Yeah.
I've either had someone go, "Wow, you're really tall," and that allows me to talk to someone, and then eventually something happens.
Yep.
But I've never even, this sounds like a weird, it sounds like I'm exaggerating, I've never actually walked up to a girl and hit on her before, because I'm a nerd and I'm nervous. I can't do that. I don't know how people do it.
I like weird girls. You know what I mean? Like, I like Kelly Osbourne. You
really?
Know what I mean? Yeah, I like...
So
like,
have you or what?
No. I don't fucking even know her. I know a guy I used to hang out with. I tried to get her on the show. But, you know, I like her. I love Karen O, that kind of look. You know what I mean? Like, Karen O's fantastic.
You know what's funny? I wasn't attracted to... I've actually never met the Osbourne kids. Weirdly. We've been in the same room a bunch of times. Like, Jeff Beecher is a mutual friend, and we always used to be in that room together. But I've never actually spoken to her. I didn't fancy her, but I do say that the English accent makes you hotter.
Well, totally. But how about the other sister that wasn't on the show? She's got a record out or a song.
I heard about that. Norman Reedus is a big fan of her. He was telling me about her.
Her name's Amy Osborne, and she opted to not be on the show.
Yeah.
And this fucking, look at it, people, if you're listening, YouTube the video.
What's her name?
Amy Osborne.
I'll
and
totally
the,
look her
the
up.
The video's incredible, and the song's it's kind
yeah,
of
part of me.
It's
part
kind
of me
of
wishes
Star, you know.
Sometimes I wish I did what she did and didn't do on, go on the show. But honestly, it opened a lot of doors, and the reason I'm writing for HuffPost is because of that. Because
right.
at the end of the day, you know, the people who want to hire you are running a business, and they want to get views or sales.
You're right.
And if you're on television, you have a better chance of getting some sort of attention. So that it opens doors. I don't regret doing the show at all because I really enjoy the opportunities it provides professionally.
Like, well, I'm not yeah. knocking it at all because it's like
yeah, people do, and I don't. I've never watched reality shows. I never watched the Osbournes. I never watched the Kardashians. I don't watch it. I didn't watch my own, but it was an opportunity.
Yeah. So it's you're fucked because you can't control who your parents are.
No,
I was saying like when you come out of your mom, you can't go. Oh,
not to get too graphic.
Put me back in.
Not
you know
to
what
get
I mean?
Too graphic.
No, but what I'm saying is so.
No, I don't want this one. Give me the next family.
If you shit on that person because their parents are famous, you're an asshole.
But also,
if you can shit on them if they're shitty people,
you agree.
Believe me, I always say it on the show. Some famous kids are just garbage cans. And
you know who's actually really weirdly nice is that other Hilton guy got in trouble, Conrad Hilton.
Oh yeah, Conrad,
for saying some really shitty things to that. Baron Hilton, who I went to high school with, is a really sweet kid. And I don't know if any family gets more shit than the Hilton. I mean,
right?
You know, I know Paris a little bit. We met in passing. Baron's the sweetest kid ever, but I think anyone who looks at him and sees his last name will automatically put douchebag on his forehead.
Right, like, right.
And I can't imagine what that must be like because not even I have that like level of, oh, they're a douchebag right away before they even say anything.
Yeah, not at all.
Rich douchebag.
I never thought about
that. And he lives a great life. You know, he's obviously very lucky, but there is something to be said about that judgment. It's not fair. He's a really nice kid.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want any of the Kardashian money to be a Kardashian, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they have the world at their fingertips, and yet the reputation...
Zero respect.
Even
zero.
Even they got into Vogue and blah, blah, blah. It's just...
doesn't mean shit. Your dad wrote
it's
song.
Interesting how big you can be while also not being liked.
Your dad, right... like in New York,
yeah,
nobody fucking is going to believe in these guys.
Yeah,
they're not foxy dudes.
No,
you know, they put together a band that all odds are against them.
Yeah,
and they get a manager. They sign on a disco label, Casablanca.
Yeah,
they got Bill O'Coin who's working the shit out of them. They sell no records until a live one.
Yeah,
and now. He's still playing to this day.
Manager pays for the tours on his
manager
own credit card.
On
yeah.
his own credit card. Yeah. Also, they write the songs. They learn the instruments. They tour the world. He's spitting fire.
He learns from a magician how to spit fire.
Yeah, spit fire. Catches on fire a few times. Ace gets electrocuted. I'm saying all the crazy shit over the years. And that's why when I look at you, I go, oh, well, those guys are something. They dug from the dirt and got some. When I look at
I definitely. There's an irony in that, too, because I can't have that because I didn't come from. And you, like you said, you can't choose
I understand.
Your parents. So there's that struggle. There's a dignity in it that, you know, I live a really blessed life, but there's a dignity in pulling yourself from depths that I just will never have the opportunity to experience, even though I pay my own. I mean, I don't use daddy's credit card. Like,
right,
I don't.
Right. Does he give you money?
No, I'm.
Where do you get money?
I've made money from the show. I make money from writing. I make money from doing gigs sometimes. Yeah. And
you model?
No, I mean, actually, maybe soon. Actually, weirdly, my manager's pushing
you
me to
look like
do
a model.
Stop it, Dean.
I think so. You're tall.
You put that mic down and come over here, baby.
Are we going to that Varvatos party?
Yeah, come.
You're gonna DJ it?
Yeah, I'm not a DJ. I'm putting together a playlist.
Yeah,
that's not DJing.
I've been
I mean, that's what DJing used to be. But
yep.
Yeah, I'm putting together songs to play. I hate saying I'm DJing the party. It's
now you and your sister
douche alert
live fucking, together, right? Like
we bought a house together, and I don't want to say where, but in LA.
That's pretty wild. I mean,
and,
you guys.
Yeah,
are
but
tight.
No, we pay our own rent, and we pay our own utilities and everything. I own my car.
Yeah.
So the first thing people say when they want to, say mean things to me is, oh, trust fund kid. And I'm like, well, here's my statement. I mean,
yeah.
Show you my bank statement. Like I'm making money on anybody else. I'm not, anywhere near as wealthy as other members of my family, but yeah. I like the feeling of
what's your dad worth?
Yeah, since college, like since I graduated college, I've been on my own dime. So
what is your dad worth, man?
You can Google that. That's online.
Is that right?
Yeah,
is that
I don't
real?
Remember.
Is
yeah,
it's the real number
somewhere on there. It's the real
That's
number.
That's incredible, right?
But I don't know. He it's funny because he doesn't spend it really on the things that rich people spend.
What's he buy?
On. Nothing. He drives the same Lincoln Navigator he's driven forever. He has one car.
Really?
He spends more on my mom than he does on him at all. He does not buy expensive clothing. He loves free hats. He loves free baseball cap. Whenever like someone wants to promote their brand, wants to give him a free hat, he will wear the hat.
That is I got to get him
loves
a
free hats.
Talk hat.
Yes, he will wear it. He's worn hats that he didn't know what the logo meant.
Yeah.
He could have been wearing like, the American Nazi Party hat. He wouldn't have known.
What
he would never have known.
What is that about?
He likes free shit. But he doesn't like nice. He likes salt of the earth. He likes t-shirts and he likes jeans.
Yeah.
But he doesn't like buying new jeans. He doesn't like buying new stuff. He's like, I got plenty of shirts. He's one of those guys.
Wow.
No fleet of cars. One car that works.
Yeah.
That's all he, that's
and
all
they're
he
the same house from the show?
Yeah. Same house. He's got the only other properties he had is because, you know, my mother loves Canada and it was a, sort of an anniversary thing. We have a place in Whistler, Canada that he never goes to.
And nothing else? Nothing in New York?
No, we've been trying to convince him to invest in New York because we think it's a good investment, not because we think he should be flaunting his cash, but I think it's a good idea because it's only going to go up over there. But he doesn't want the hassle, and he just wants to hoard it all like hoarders. Like
just all this.
What money to him is, and this is what he doesn't talk about at all.
Yeah.
Ever. He says a lot of funny things. This is again another way he just does not communicate well at all.
Yeah.
He'll say, "I love money. I love greed is good. You know, whatever that Wall Street shit."
Yeah.
What he's actually said to me in private and like one on one when he's talked about what it means to him is like it's. The bigger the wall between me and starvation, the better.
Oh my! Well, it's a giant wall.
Yeah, but like he says, that wall can't be big enough because I remember what it's like to eat ketchup sandwiches and to live in a house with bullet holes in it.
Wow!
In Haifa, he literally lived in a house that had bullet holes in it. So he said, the bigger I can build the wall between me, my mother, and you guys, between us and that, the happier I am. So that's when he says, like the more money I have, the happier I am, that's what he means.
It's like a constant paranoia. It's like
it's
me.
The more security, the better. Yeah.
I think with comedians, too, it's like if I take a day off, I won't be funny. You know what I mean? So you're constantly working when you're like, what are you doing?
He pictures it as this just buffer between him and that old life he used to live. And people have no idea because he purposefully, for some fucking reason, portrays this greedy kind of Wall Street capitalist guy. He's really less that and more just an immigrant who's thrilled to be eating today. Like, he's oh, my God.
Yeah.
Look at all this food in my fridge. This is amazing. Like, Dave Grohl, he said when he made it big with Nirvana, he's like, oh, I can get a bigger grill. This is great. Like, he's that guy, and he never advertises that at all, and I don't know why.
Does he go out a lot?
I don't know.
I haven't seen him in a while.
Go out, what?
Like go out to, like, you
know.
He never
goes to clubs or anything. Hey.
Yeah,
he's always hated that.
That's crazy, right?
No, he's doing a lot of other non-music related stuff right now.
He is? What's he doing?
He's doing like, I don't think I'm allowed to talk about it.
Oh, good.
Whatever. But he's doing like weird take over the world Illuminati shit. I'm a summer intern at the Illuminati. That's my
wow.
Yeah, I met
you believe in the Illuminati?
No, I'm kidding.
I know, it's
kidding,
hilarious,
right?
Right?
I met Reagan. He's a frozen head. It's great. I'm totally kidding. And Walt Disney. He's very nice. He's got a robot hand. I shook it.
Oh my God.
I like Bill Burr's bit about the bankers, and Bill Burr rants about the bankers taking over the world.
Let's talk a little comedy here before out. We met at the Comedy Store.
Sorry for rambling, man.
Yeah, no, dude. I'm having a great time. We met at the Comedy Store. I seriously thought that you were going quite a bit like, oh, he's going to try comedy.
I can never try it. It's too hard. I can't do it.
But you're way into comedy, and you go to the store a lot.
All the time.
What gets you into it? I think your dad, did he hang out with Sam Kinison back in the day? Yeah, I'm not sure on that either. But what got you into comedy?
I know. Dad loves Dice. I mean, him and Dice get along because that's back in the day. He was like a showman. And we love Jeff Ross. Jeff Ross has been a family friend for a while.
Oh, wow. That's great. But, he's great, right? You watch the Bieber roast?
Yeah, I watch a little bit of his stuff. Yeah. I don't really care about Bieber, honestly, enough to watch. Like, I don't have anything ill will against him. I just don't really.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
I feel like hating these guys is the wrong approach. It's like, I don't like the Teletubbies either because it's not for me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
for kids. That's what I always say. Like, people go,
it's not
like,
my demographic. I don't hate Justin Bieber. Yeah, this is not
my. How come you don't, whatever? It's like, dude, I'm 49.
They're not pitching to me.
I didn't even like that stuff when I was like nine. I wasn't into Sean Cassidy. I was into Kiss.
Yeah.
And that's I'm talking Partridge Family.
But there are people who like shit on young Disney kind of pop stars because they think it makes them cooler.
I got time for that.
No, I don't hate them. It's just I don't hate the Power Rangers. I don't hate Barney the Dinosaur because it's not for me. Yeah. Anyway, comedy. So I have almost as much comedy on my iTunes as I do music, literally. Like I have thousands of.
So who's your favorite?
Oh, man.
Burr. You love Burr.
Burr's up there. Yeah. I love Stanhope. I love, even though he would hate me. Because I have a funny story about weaseled my fucking way into his show.
Yeah, tell that story.
Did I tell you this? Okay.
Yeah, tell it to
you. Okay, so I weasel my way into
it's a sold-out show.
It's a sold-out show. And I'm, when it comes to my heroes, like, he's one of my heroes, and I have no shame. I just, like, I need to go to that show. I have to. So I pulled out all the, I hung my head between my legs, and I was like, Dad, please help me get into that show. And I hate asking for things. I don't like pulling that card because it's too easy and it's crass and it's like.
And it's expected.
And it's also like it's everything Stanhope's against.
Yeah.
But like I just want to see him so bad. So I'm like, please, I'll beg. I'll send him flowers. I'll send them whatever. Please get me into that show. And so the management calls. And of course, you know, the store is very accommodating. They're very nice. And I get in, and one of the first things Stanhope says on stage is, you know, the funny thing about coming to L.A. is that everyone who's even touched the shoe of a fucking famous person tries to call in a favor. Like, everyone's, you know, like everyone who's even how many degrees away from Kevin Bacon do you have to name drop motherfucking Kevin Bacon? You know, like
yeah,
he goes
right
off on people who in L.A. who, you know, are barely famous and try to weasel that whatever leverage they have to get free shit.
Right.
And I want to pay. Like, I don't care. Like, I just love stand-up so much. But I was sitting there like, I may not have been the only, you know, person in there that did that, but that was definitely part of it. I was definitely a jab at me for sure.
You think,
100%.
You think before he went on,
because we talked
to
his manager.
Yeah.
We talked to his manager. We said, like, please, can we please go see? I love him so much. And I met the manager, shook hands, very nice. But, you know, of course he heard about it. Like, hey, we got it's the Simmons kid in here.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he was like, why the fuck do we have that kid? Like, who the fuck is he? Like, he hasn't done shit. You know, and I'm like, yeah, I know. I just love you.
That's hilarious.
So I was a fanboy. And
Stanhope, who else?
Stanhope.
You got Burr.
I love Rogan.
Rogan, awesome.
I love Maron.
Yeah, Maron.
Obviously, yes. Present party.
Yeah. Thanks, dude.
I'm missing somebody. I love, who was it? I loved Hedberg back in the day,
CK?
Obviously. CK is such an obvious, you know, I'm such a hipster about CK because I feel like I liked him before he was cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I love CK.
I don't like to say it first because everyone's like, oh, yeah, I do too. I'm like, no. I liked him when he had hair. Do you understand?
Yeah,
I liked him when he was making noises back in the day.
Oh, you like that era with the dolphins?
Oh, I
like
the whole thing. I love the whole.
Get the dolphin sounds.
I liked his first Comedy Central Presents special, and I was showing people his stuff.
Wow.
And then I didn't know he would get so big, but Patton, I love Patton.
Yeah.
Patton Oswalt.
You like the Comedy Store the most?
There's something magical about that place, I think.
Right?
I like Laugh Factory too, but that other room they put you in at the top is weird, and I don't know. I like Comedy Store. You can just walk in and get a ticket. You know who I missed out? I left out T.J. Miller.
Oh, my God. He's a monster.
T.J. Miller is on a great show. He's still underrated, in my opinion.
That's what I said.
Totally underrated comedian.
This guy, Silicon Valley, steals every scene.
He does this thing where he does like meta jokes, where he'll do a joke that's mildly funny, and then the structure of the joke is another joke. You know what I mean? Like, he does this thing about how he did this thing about this thing called font jokes, where like he'll say like, you know, there's no good font jokes, and then he'll have a weird awkward pause and he'll just move on to a bit that lasts for about 15 minutes, and at the end of the bit he'll tie that in to that random thing he said about fun.
And that's how CK used to be, remember? With
weird.
Awesome Possum.
Yes, exactly.
So he'd go, yeah, I went into the coffee shop and it was
fuck
one of those
you,
girls.
I thought it was
like,
cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he's like, no, I saw a kid. He had the same shirt, Awesome Possum. But he slips into the thing. It's like when you're at Venice Beach and the guy's just rollerblading. Yeah. He's got a G-string on. It's just dick and balls.
Just grabbing his dick and balls. Here's your balls, you fucking
And then he goes into the post office thing. Like, well, let me get the Jackie Robinson stamps. Ah, this motherfucker. And then he finishes that and he goes, so I'm in this coffee shop. And the kid has a shirt. And you go, oh, fuck.
I can't describe TJ's style, but it's unique. It's uniquely his own. He'll do this thing. He'll tell a weird story, and then he'll break the fourth wall kind of and remark about how weird the bit was, but he'll do it as one of the characters in the bit.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll do two characters talking, and then he'll go, this is a weird premise for a joke, as one of the guys. And it's like this weird Wonderland style of comedy.
He's fucking magic.
Bizarre.
He's magic, man.
He ended his, he did that Ari Shaffir show.
Yeah. Oh, that's my favorite.
This is not happening.
I told you that
I watched it last night.
I told you, remember I said, make sure you watch
TJ Miller's.
Unbelievable.
The way he ends that
is
brilliant, because he goes, he's as this doctor talking to him. And he goes, the doctor's like, well, would you rather die or not be funny? He goes, well, have you ever tried comedy? He goes, well, I've tried telling a joke. Have you ever had a joke not go well? The doctor's like, oh, yeah, I guess I have. I guess I have, you know, sometimes I have a premise of a joke that seems really good, but then it goes on a little too long and the payoff isn't really as good as you thought. And then he finishes and that's it. And that's the joke.
That's
and you're like, holy shit, that was all planned. You think he's losing it. Like, you think he's
incredible.
Losing the audience. He's doing this thing where he's bombing on purpose in the service of a bigger joke. It's brilliant.
He's incredible. Yeah. Dude,
by the way, you murdered that Jay Davis thing.
Oh!
You destroyed everyone.
Oh,
you destroyed.
Dude. Thank you so much,
I can't wait for your special.
Thank you so much. That's so cool, man. I'm so glad you got to see that.
You annihilated.
That was a magic night.
You annihilated. I've seen you do good shows. That was another level.
You know what? I think it's because when I'm in a theater, I love that fucking feeling of it's rock and roll to me. It's like a big theater, and it feels like rock to me because I played music so long. So I'm like, all right, let's fucking turn this up a notch.
There's a backstage. There's an amp.
It's this thing. It's me, and they're out there. Let's fucking
darkness,
let's,
sea.
Singing
to an ocean. You can hear the ocean.
Yeah.
Zeppelin lyrics.
I love that fucking that night, man.
Play for me and play for free and play a whole lot more.
Well, thanks for coming by, dude.
Thanks for having me.
So cool, dude. You got a Twitter, right?
Yeah. My Twitter's Nick Types Words. My Instagram is Nick Sees Things.
Okay.
Because I wanted to be a clever douchebag about it. And now I'm sick of those names. But
tell your sister to come by and do the show.
Yeah. My website's coming soon. It's nicktsimmons.com. I'm DJing the John Varvatos Stewart House Benefit on April 26th.
Can people get into that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can buy it. It's for charity. So some of the proceeds go to this foundation.
Those are so fun.
And what else do I have to whore right now? Album's coming soon. Stay tuned. Just follow me on Twitter. And
you play an instrument?
Yeah, I play piano and guitar.
Wow, that's cool.
There's one thing. Oh, I designed a couple shirts for this thing called the Style Club that's benefiting my sister's charity. She has a charity called Sophie's Place. The Center for Child Development in Surrey. So we designed a couple unisex t-shirts to benefit her thing. So go pick up a couple.
Where do you get them at?
Just go on my Twitter, go on thestyleclub.com, look for my name.
All right, cool.
Cool, thanks.
Dude, thank you so much, man.
Thanks.
And there you go. I'm glad that we met. It's
Hey, can we end this like Bill Burr ends his stuff?
What is it? Wait, hold on. Before we end it,
yeah.
You got to understand me as like an 11-year-old kid in my room listening to Kiss, and now I have Gene's son at my house, and we're friends.
Well, I'll bring him out one of these nights. He loves comedy.
So weird, you know what I mean? I love it.
Well, we'll all hang out. He loves stand up. So let me know when there's like a good show.
Wednesday
to go to.
Wednesday night's
bring
a big one. It's a big Death Squad show.
I think he just got back into town. So,
and I'm not going to tell you on the air who's going to be there, but. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's end it.
How Bill ends all his. Okay. All right. Go fuck yourself.
All right.
All right.
There you go, guys. Thanks for tuning in to Let There Be Talk.